We have a witness go on record saying that they saw you in the White House parking lot with Mr. Egan, Ms. Bruckheimer, and Senator Pierce.
That's correct. I ran into them by chance because I was merely getting something from my car.
What were you getting?
I was getting some medicine.
What kind of medicine?
It's knee medicine.
Knee medicine?
Yeah, knee medicine. I have problems with my left knee. It hurts when I crouch.
What was the name of the medicine?
I want to say it's called crouch cream. But that's not right. It's a white tube with a red label. I'm sure an intern could research this. It has a silhouette of a horse on it. And I don't know why the horse is on there. I guess horses probably have good knees. So, but I think it's called knee-Z cream. I don't think that's it.
TBTM!
He hates these cans! Stay away from the cans!
This is genius. This is genius work.
Just because you like laying around your house in your underpants doesn't mean the United States of America has to see it.
Is there, and I'm just guessing here, some kind of medication that you maybe need a lot of and have taken none of, or maybe too much of today?
I stand corrected. This is compelling radio.
Bumpuses, get in here. Time to do the show.
Oh, hi, everybody. Sorry. I didn't realize this was on. Welcome to a Tuesday afternoon edition of TBTL, the show that just might be too beautiful to live.
This is a serious message to everybody watching my update right now.
My name is Luke Burbank. I'm your host, coming to you from the Burbank Springs Broadcast Center, perched up Alabama Hill in Bellingham, Washington, the Bay City. Ugh, another crummy day. We are just in the midst of 2 weeks of almost uninterrupted, crummy, rainy days. I got up this morning. I looked out the window. It was torrentially raining, sideways, by the way, here at Burbank Springs. And something weird came over me. I don't do this a lot. This is not how I process my rain-related grief. But today I was just like, I got to eat some kind of sweet treat. So I went right before the show. I went through the whole house. We had nothing good and sweet, no candy bars to eat except one old, very broken violet crumble.
Never do anything out of hunger.
Do you guys know what a violet crumble is? It's kind of weird, like Australian candy bar. My sister brought it over as a joke. So I horfed that down, and I'm feeling pretty good, you guys. I'm feeling ready to do episode 2615 in a collector's series.
Let the fun begin.
Oh, speaking of food, we've actually got some food news for the top stories.
Welcome to Food News Today.
We're talking about another maligned candy, the Necco wafer. Long the least popular candy in America.
It tastes like soot and hot water. I'm hooked.
Well, it's been announced that they're not going to make them anymore, and there is a run on Necco wafers. So we'll get into that. Also, a guy ate the hottest pepper on planet Earth, at least that we know of, called the Carolina Reaper. He had to immediately go to the hospital.
Feel, 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 feel. Feel my heat.
Feel my heat.
Yeah, it's definitely.
By the way, the Carolina Reaper pepper was actually created, like, kind of in a laboratory, through some, presumably some sort of hybriding process. And I'm going to tell you, when we get to this story, what the name of the company is that created the Carolina Reaper. And you are going to laugh and laugh the whole time. So we'll do all of that. We'll do some emails, do some females. We'll see if the dogs bumpus their way through the show.
Bumpuses!
They have just really been going for it. We've, of course, got Pod Dog here, who usually is pretty mellow in the daytime, but then her cousin, I mean, I don't know, it's a dog that is owned by my in-laws, I don't know if Rudy considers Daisy May to be her cousin. But anyway, this dog that belongs to her in-laws, who, by the way, rip-diddle-lip-dip-dip-dip, it was your birthday yesterday, Daniel. Congratulations to Adam and Elizabeth, my in-laws, for bringing their new son Daniel into the world. Well, in the meantime, we're watching their dog, and those animals are going cray. So that will probably happen at some point during the show. Also, we'll probably talk to this guy, the longest-running Cobro of the show, known for his drawings of tall ships, their grace, and their majesty. The other thing that's not helping, by the way, is that Rudy's toenails are so long right now that she just, I can't think of a good way to describe the sound, but when she clicks and clacks down the hall, it's pretty noisy. Anyway, this guy wants to get one thing out of the way right here at the top of the show, because there's been some talk on Facebook. Some people have thought his comments are personal in nature. He says no.
I have been pitying fools for 28 years, Bill, and it's never personal.
It's never personal with this guy. He's Andrew Walsh, and he joins us now from the Roosevelt neighborhood of Seattle, Washington. Hello.
Hello. Hey, I have some good news for you, I think.
Oh, good.
It was raining here about an hour ago, cold, almost like sleet, but I don't think it was. I think it was rain. But it is now very sunny outside. It's totally cleared up. It's like a spring day here. And you know what they say, Luke, when it's sunny in the city, it's going to get pretty up in Bellingham. So I have a feeling that this weather is headed your way, and it's going to put a smile on your face, and you're not going to have to eat pastries.
Well, too late, because I already ate the violet crumble. And I'll tell you this. I'm leaning into it being a crappy day. I was supposed to go for a run today. I was supposed to eat healthy. I was supposed to do a bunch of things, Andrew, but I just didn't have the energy for it. And so I made the decision that I was going to just eat almost an entire bag of pita chips, dipping them in some homemade raita that I made, which is a kind of like a yogurt sauce you get when you get Indian food. By the way, last night I made chicken tikka, which is kind of like tandoori chicken, but I went and I bought all the supplies. I had to go to a really out of the way little convenience store that sells Indian spices and all kinds of stuff that you can't find in the typical regular grocery store. I went and I got all that stuff and I fixed up this Indian meal and it was so good.
Yes.
Very happy with that.
It makes the house smell so good. Veeves and I made chicken tikka masala, which I think is different. I don't know what the tikka reference is in there, but the masala is more of it's got more of a creamy gravy kind of situation going on.
Yeah, buttery
on.
Sauce kind of.
Yeah,
thing.
And we made that, a long time ago now, like, I don't know, last winter or so. Maybe it was over the summer. And it was so good. I mean, it was more of an involved thing. Like, I don't know what yours involved. We had, we were pounding chicken with chicken hammers, stuff like that. But we were so proud of ourselves, because usually you do something like that and the first time you make a recipe, you're like, well, it doesn't really taste like the restaurant. Like, this was better than a restaurant, I felt. Yet we've never returned to it. We made a goal to go back to it. So I'm a little envious. Can you? So tikka, though, it doesn't have that sauce, right? You were making something, is it more like a oven type of thing?
Well, you get some chicken breast, you cut it up into cubes. Ultimately, it's going to go on a skewer on your barbecue.
If
you had a tandoori oven, you would be using the tandoori oven, but you don't if you're me. And so you mix it up with a kind of you marinate it in a kind of combination of Indian spices and things, and then you leave that in the fridge for a couple hours. You pull that out, then you kind of make this little mix of with a special flour that's kind of, it's called gram flour. It's made from ground up chickpeas. You throw a little gram flour and a few other, there's something called mustard oil that you use. You use a special kind of Kashmiri chili powder that gives it a red color but doesn't make it too spicy. And so you kind of whip that all together, and then you grill it up on the barbecue. And then I made cauliflower rice, which I'm loving right now. I swear to God, cauliflower rice for me is pretty close to being as good as normal rice.
I would love to try that. I love cauliflower. Genevieve has been, for the past, like, while now, I mentioned this recently on the show that she's been in a really good program for like at least the past 6 months, where she's been, you know, always having kind of brown rice on hand and some chicken or you know, some sort of a protein, and she's been packing her lunch every day, and you know, not starving herself, but just kind of eating right. And I think taking a lunch to work is a big part of that. So
how many violet crumbles a day is she eating? Because that's a big part of a balanced diet.
She's just slamming. That's the one thing. She just slams the violet crumbles, which I want to hear more about that. Anyway, so I would be 100% ready to try the cauliflower rice. That sounds great. You know that I'm not watching my weight or health at all, but I'm just like in love with the zoodle. I'm in love with the zoodle. But here's the one thing Genevieve mentioned to me. If she doesn't eat, you know, brown rice, relatively healthy, but still a carb, she says that, like, if she doesn't have that little bit of brown rice with her lunch, like, she is just going to be starving later on in the day and maybe having a weak spot where she needs something. I guess you've just kind of pushed through that, huh? Like,
well, I mean, yes, although today I ate practically an entire bag of pita chips and a violet crumble. So I haven't pushed through that hard. But for me, it's mostly just how do I describe it? I mean, I don't know. The cauliflower rice is pretty ricey, and like, you know, you sort of cook it up with some oil. You put some garlic in there. I had some chopped up cilantro. I tried to make it as close to basmati rice as I could, which is like what you'd get in the Indian restaurant.
Yeah.
What I thought was my favorite part of this whole journey was I drive out to this place called Intercontinental Foods, which is on Meridian here in Bellingham. But it's out kind of at the edge of town. And it's like because I was trying to find a place that would have all of this stuff. And so I drive out there and I pull up and I'm thinking I'm going to like a food store that specializes in Indian foods and spices. And as I approach it, I realize, no, this is a mini mart. Like, they sell, like, rhinoceros boner pills and lotto tickets. Mm-hmm. And I go in, and it's just like – and it's also – this part of town is – let's just say it's not exactly the fanciest part of Bellingham. So it's like I'm in line behind a few people that look like they're kind of on the margins. And I'm already in my head – I look around the store. I don't see any of the stuff I want. Like, it's just – it's like a typical convenience store. And it happens to be run by a man who appears to be, you know, Indian. But I'm just like, I'm almost talking myself out of even waiting in the line to get up there to talk to him, because I have this printout of these various exotic items I need. And so it's like I shuffle my way up to the front of the line and I go, "Hi, I'm making chicken tikka." And his eyes just light up.
Ha!
And I'm like, "Do you have this?" And he's like, "We have everything." He takes me to the back of the store. There's this part of the store I didn't see that's like the coolest, everything legit from India, like – every single thing on my list, he has it. He's totally giving me tips on how to make chicken tikka. I don't want to get into like white savior mode, but I think it was probably a more fun part of his day than selling a lotto ticket to a person who'd just been panhandling outside the store. You know, we ended up having a kind of a fun little adventure picking out all the ingredients in the back of this store. Then he was like, he saw other stuff on my list and he was like, "Oh, you need cauliflower?" And I had bought that stuff at the big grocery store. And I was like, "Oh, I got that at Hagen." He was like, "Oh, man, we have it for so much cheaper than Hagen." And he was like giving me – he was like very proud of like he had some fresh vegetables and he was telling me how it's a deal and everything. So that ended up actually being maybe the most fun part of the experience.
Yeah, that's great. I love your story. It's a beautiful story. I love stuff like that.
Thank you, Shatner.
I don't do that stuff enough, but on the occasion that I go to a butcher or I get all the produce for dinner at a open air market, you know, like some sort of a farmer's market or the experience you're describing, every time I do it, I understand why people, I don't know. I'm just so lazy. It's so easy to not cook and, you know, eat out or get takeout or what have you.
Well,
but on the occasion that I actually do something like that and it becomes a whole experience, it's just, I love it.
Yesterday was, I said we're on a run of a bunch of bad days, but actually yesterday up here, it wasn't nice, but it at least wasn't raining. So I saw an opportunity to try to mow the lawn because I knew we're going to be back at it again with the white vans today. So I made this whole, I don't know if it's quite a coat hook moment, but yesterday morning when I got up, I constructed a whole scenario in my mind, which was going to be mow the lawn, get everything all ship shape in the yard, go get my fixins. Actually, it was going to be go get my fixins to make this kind of low-carb, delicious Indian food thing, marinate it, handle the yard stuff, and then at some point be sitting out by the barbecue with my tandoori chicken grilling away, drinking an adult beverage and listening to the Mariners thump the Kansas City Royals.
How that
zero parts of that plan came together.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, it was way more complicated than I thought it was going to be to do the chicken. Although now that I know, I think I can do it much quicker. So I was basically, the Mariners got their asses handed to them. The lawnmower was being persnickety. By the time I had everything marinated and ready to go, it was like 9 o'clock at night. I'm out grilling wearing a headlamp, by the way, because we don't have any lights near where the barbecue is. And like, but I was obsessed with having my moment. So finally, when I got those things on the grill at 9:15 p.m. in the dark with the Mariners already vanquished, I drank my vodka soda and I sat in my lawn chair and I said, still pretty good. Still pretty good.
Pretty. Hey.
But here's what I wanted to say.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, which is like you say that nice weather might be moving our way. But honestly, like I had gone. Like yesterday, I was super productive. I did a bunch of errands. I got all the stuff. I made friends with a presumably Indian American man, and I did mow the lawn. I was very proud of myself yesterday. Today, I had made peace with the fact that it was just going to be a lost day. I was basically going to do this podcast. I was going to do a few of my other jobs that are internet and email related, but probably do them from bed. Probably go get back in bed. And just be a lump. Just be Professor Bananas lumping it up.
Lump it up.
I was ready for that. And that was part of why I let my – because when I started off eating the leftovers of my healthy food. So that was like, okay, I'm eating healthy food still. And then I was like that yogurt sauce, which by the way I made on the fly yesterday because I forgot to like go buy some from a restaurant. And I actually had all the stuff I needed to make.
Another
so that was
great
awesome.
Feeling. Yes. I love God. It. When you like, have this, everything.
I know. I was like, this is what it's like to – be living moss. Like I could, oh, raita? Sure. Plain yogurt? Yeah. Cardamom? Boom. Get at me. So I wanted to use the rest of that because it's so good. So then I was like, well, some pita chips. Those would be nice. So then that just led me down a spiral of pita chips and of just like staring into the refrigerator blankly. Like after I'd already eaten way more food than I needed, I was just like, yeah, but my soul still feels empty. Let me stare into this refrigerator for a while. There's got to be that. I came down here. I sat. I started doing some work. And I just couldn't let this idea of having something sweet go. And I was like, I could eat some diet ice cream. But that seemed weird at like 12:30 on a Tuesday. So I dug through the cabinets. And honestly, the only thing that was candy related was this Violet Crumble, which I've just found a TV commercial from 1982 for the Violet Crumble. Would you like to hear this?
Do I have to answer that?
Of course. When you want something that tastes just right, crack a crumble. Violet Crumble. The big honeycomb bite. Honeycomb. Crisp. Light. Golden. There's nothing like it. That's Violet Crumble. The big honeycomb bite. Violet Crumble's the one. So crack a crumble. Violet Crumble. The big honeycomb bite.
There you go.
I wasn't listening closely enough when you were describing it in the intro. For some reason, the term Violet Crumble made me think that it was a some sort of a pastry, maybe a scone-ish. No, not that bad, but like some sort of a pastry that had, you know, some sort of raspberry stuff in the middle. I didn't realize it was a mass-produced candy.
Yeah, bar. It's just like a chocolate-covered, it's like a chocolate-covered honeycomb thingy, which. We used to get them at Chubby and Tubby. When my dad liked them. Huh. I never even liked them. I don't like them to this day. I didn't even enjoy eating that one. But that's how much I needed to try to fill the void. And I tried.
Two points. Go ahead. Yeah, I was going to say, I am very much interested. I just did a quick search on Violent Crumble, and I'm not seeing anything. So I think that's a great name for
a
movie.
That's the third member of ICP.
Whoop, whoop. Oh, God. Violet Crumble. Well, this is family. That is fantastic. Secondly, speaking of your dad, I've been thinking about your dad a lot lately. As we've discussed on the show, I know.
He is also down under.
Oh, well, yeah, of course. I actually forgot about that. But also when I'm at the bar that I like to go to now, Teddy's, just off of Roosevelt here in my new neighborhood, and we've talked on the show that your dad painted those signs. I assume both the outside wooden sign of Teddy's and the inside sign, and they have a little caricature of Teddy Roosevelt, of course. And I think I asked you off air if your dad designed the Teddy logo, the Roosevelt logo, or if he was given it and just painted it. And you do not have an answer to that, right?
I don't have the answer to that. I mean, I could, if I had to guess, I mean, he's not really like, he's not, certainly not a caricaturist. Like, I don't think he could have drawn that, or I don't think he would have drawn that. Like, that's not really his specialty. So I guess if I had to guess, I would say they probably gave it to him and said, can you make this into a sign?
That makes sense. But I did mention to somebody in passing when I was in there, like another bar fly just kind of mentioned, oh, yeah, my buddy's dad made that sign. And then I didn't know if he – because I think the reason it came up was the bartender was wearing a baseball cap with the logo on it, the Teddy Roosevelt Ooh. Caricature. I was like, oh, that's sweet. You sell those hats? And he's like, no, and only for like – it's for our softball league. So we only had a few of them made up, and so
well,
I'm really jealous.
We
got to
get on the softball team.
I know
this. You, me, that guy climbing out the window. I mean, we got this.
We got
three people that are ready to go.
That's a great premise for our summer adventure. Like, how are Luke and Andrew and Window Guy gonna get on the big team? That's great. But anyway, that kind of led to that conversation. So I'd love closure to that. If your dad, when he gets back stateside, if you don't mind asking, do you think he remembers it? Though he does so many jobs. Right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I think he actually updated some. I think he might have updated the sign a few years ago.
Oh, okay.
Can we do this real quick? Can we take a quick break because we're overdue for that? And then I want to actually tell you, like, my wife has been showing me updates on Facebook.
That's my wife.
From my dad's Facebook post from New Zealand. Great. Of course, he and my brother, DFTB, are in New Zealand at various Lord of the Rings locations, places that were backdrops for the films. And my dad is doing something really funny on Facebook that I want to tell you about. But let's do that right after this very short break. Don't go anywhere. Do you think that the guy who had the store that didn't want any long-haired freaky people working there, do you think he was bummed when he found out that he had almost hired a long-haired freaky person, or do you think he was relieved?
I think, you know, I think that he was the same guy who invented the term owned with a P. And I think he was just like, I just got owned. And I think he thinks about it to
pwned.
This day. Yeah. I think that it was a moment that really stuck with him. I think that he had a moment where he realized, I think he's been judging people the wrong way, and I think this was an eye-opening moment for him. So,
see, I don't think that's what happened at all. I think he was like, oh, this young man from Tesla, although actually it was, what was it, the five-man electrical band or whatever, the original song.
Yeah, I think so.
He was like, oh, this seems like a nice young fellow. Sure, you can work here. And then the guy was like, put his hat off and was like, imagine that. And he was like, whoo, dodged a bullet.
This guy's
got problems.
Yeah, I mean, that'd be a,
geez, you know what? My anti-long-hair freaky people rules really just came in handy. Yeah, those are based on some pretty decent science.
All my prejudices are really playing out. I think it's he just doubled down
Super
on everything.
Super unprofessional.
Yeah. You should have heard the racist rant he went on after that. It's like, I'm right about all this shit now.
So my dad and my bro are in New Zealand. And now I haven't actually, because I'm not on Facebook, so I haven't actually looked at this in a couple days. It's mostly just been stuff that my wife has pulled up to show me on her phone. But what it appears my dad is doing from New Zealand, and hopefully we can get my brother and maybe even my dad on the line because they're still there for like two more weeks. So maybe we can just try to coordinate that. But my dad loves Facebook. He loves posting pictures on Facebook. And so I think what happens is all day they go exploring Lord of the Rings locations, and then they go back to their Airbnb or whatever, and then my dad, probably on an iPad, he's probably taken a lot of these pictures on an iPad, because there's not a more dad move than taking pictures or videos on an iPad. But then he posts them on Facebook But he writes in great detail about the Lord of the Rings component. Like, so if I try to make up the text, it'll just be a bunch of gibberish because I don't know any of these names. But it'll be like, we're here in the valley of whatever. And like, this is where the hobbits had to hide from the so-and-sos. And then this happened. Okay, so he's describing this. But again, in really elaborate terms that like very few people would understand, which I think is cute, actually.
I have. Do you mind? There's one.
Oh, you have one?
Yeah, I'm on your brother's page, and so he's linked to one your dad wrote. Just up the hill from the last location is where Frodo hides from the orcs, and he motions to Merry and Pippin that he intends to leave them. And with the ring safe, we make the long ride in the dark back up to Queenstown for a good night's sleep and dream of the next day's journey.
Pretty like I like it. It's, you know, it's one part Anthony Bourdain, one part J.R.R. Tolkien. But the thing that my dad's also apparently doing, I've noticed in some of the pictures, is kind of making my brother reenact what the people were doing in the movie.
Mm-hmm. I'm seeing this.
Like
now.
There's a couple of ones where my brother's like crouched down in some roots.
Yep.
And doing other like unnatural poses. I think my dad is like having him. Or David's doing it. I don't know. We can ask him. He's basically having him get in the physical position of the characters from Loader.
Yes. I mean, your brother looks into it, though. And what I know of your brother,
obviously. Believe me, he's not getting his arm twisted on this at all. But I just think it's hilarious that he's basically it's not just like I'm standing by this tangle of roots where Frodo hid. It's like I'm down in the tangle of roots. In the same position Frodo was in when he was hiding.
They have a ring. One of these photos
is... They brought a ring with them?
One of their hands is outstretched. It's just the hand. I can't tell who it is. I think it's your brother. And in the hand is a golden ring with a chain, like with a metal... Like kind of it's looped through a metal chain so you could wear it around your neck.
Wow. I mean, they are all... in on this, which I think is actually really cute. My brother, I'm hoping he does this, actually sticks with this plan, although it may be harder than he was expecting considering how tired they are. But he took a portable audio recorder with him, and he's going to try to like kind of record some content, maybe a debrief each day with him and my dad, and maybe think about turning it into a little podcast series or something.
That'd be great.
I feel like that would be entertaining to hardcore Loader people and also to hardcore fans of Fathers and Sons having a wonderful trip. But
what are you a fan of? I'm a hardcore fan of Fathers and Sons having a good trip. That's what I like. That's what I'm
anyway,
into.
They're like, I mean, they are. Oh, and by the way, one other just weird coincidence. They were down there in some very remote part of the country at some out of the way, you know, mountain valley thing. I know those are oxymoronic, but you know what I mean? Some backdrop. And my brother runs into the occasional guitar player for the Livewire house band.
Oh, yeah, you mentioned that to me off air, I think, yesterday.
This is so crazy. Like, and the guy's like wearing a Livewire t-shirt in the New Zealand wilderness, and he runs into my brother.
That is crazy.
Okay. That doesn't bring us any closer to having a good song for our donors of the day today.
Oh. Well.
Oh, what about the Lord of the Rings? Hey, what about.
That's exactly what I was
saying. Do you have
say,
some kind of. There's got to be some very, like, it all sounds like Enya to me. I love Enya, don't get me wrong, but, like, some kind of Enya-esque Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, when the first movie came out, this forever ago now, what was that, 15 years ago, you think? I feel like there was, like, a theme, like, was it Bilbo's theme? Was it Frodo's theme? Was it just Lord of the Rings? I'm not sure, but I'm looking now here at the original soundtrack. Let's just. I don't think this is it. If I found the right song, you would recognize it in a second. But for now, let's just go with this, The Prophecy. How do you feel about that? Too serious?
I feel great about it.
Okay.
This is going to be the most epic thanking of the donors of the day we've ever done.
Can you do it in a Tolkien style, or am I putting too much pressure on you?
God, I wish I had that in me. But, you know, knowing your limitations is actually a really important part of thriving. I'm going to learn that tomorrow when I have my Thrive check-in with our direct supervisor, Nate Toby.
Oh, you're going to do it. Finally. Tomorrow's the big day.
Yes, sir. Let's thank Catherine Urbati of Brooklyn, New York, for being a donor of the day. These people, I'm going to tell you their names here. They are all folks who donated during the TBTL-a-thon, and they are making today's episode possible. How about Rachel Howell of Westminster, Colorado? What about Clinton Perry of Charlottenlund, Denmark?
Nice.
And then Johnny Kim of Honolulu, Hawaii. That's pretty cool, man. We got some Denmark in there.
And Hawaii. I mean, I get excited about that as well. That's not contiguous. What did they say? Contiguous United States? Continental United States?
Yeah. Mm. Actually, you know what? I mean, this is a pretty rockin' distribution. We got Brooklyn, Colorado, Denmark, and Hawaii.
It's going to be hard to beat that. I don't want to be jerky about it or negative, but I almost feel bad. Yeah. I'm not looking ahead, but I feel bad for tomorrow's folks. Like, can they beat that? That's a hell of a distribution.
That is pretty amazing. Anytime we get outside of the United States, that's incredible, just because I can't believe people are listening to this in other countries.
Mm-hmm.
And then, Hawaii just sounds exotic. I'm going to Hawaii in 3 weeks or something, a month. And we're very, very excited. By the way,
are you taking time off?
Yeah.
Do I need to know about that?
Probably.
Oh, yeah, get at me.
We can do that now. We can do that later.
Get at me. Let me know when you're taking vacation so I can start prepping.
I'm sure my dad would love to sit in for a few episodes and talk about Loader.
God.
He'll be back by then.
That would be great. I would do a show with your... Well, it just seems weird that I would do a show with your brother and your dad, though. I sort of feel like maybe... You know, there's a couple of days coming up and a couple of weeks when I'm going to be out. Maybe you should do that. Well, anyway, we can talk about this off air. But I think the listeners would be
tomorrow. Tomorrow it's going to be some Seattle, some Wisconsin, some Texas. Hmm. It's a decent distribution. It's a decent one, but I got to be honest with you. It's no Denmark. It's no direct flight from Denmark to Honolulu.
Yeah. Well, they set the bar high today, and that's one of the many reasons why we appreciate these folks.
I mean, it's classic Johnny, Clinton, Rachel, and Catherine. It really is. If there's anything we know about them, it's that they really dominate the foe when it comes to geographic distribution and when it comes to being generous supporters of TBTL and making the show possible. Thank you, you guys. We would not be here listening to The Prophecy without you. This episode, 2615 in a Collector Series, is thanks to all of you. This is the part.
Yeah, I went
you
back.
Got
I,
there.
I found a different one. Yeah, this is the theme song.
Smart.
The breaking,
what's it
called? The Breaking of the Fellowship.
God. When Frodo stood on the front of the Titanic and put his arms out. I swear to God, man, I'll never forget that scene.
It was pretty amazing. You know, there was enough room on that elfin boat. That's all I want to say.
It really was. There really was.
Hello and welcome to Top Story.
All right, our top story in food news today. Necco wafers may soon go out of production. And that news has led people to put a run on Necco products, not just Necco wafers, but of course, I guess that company also makes Mary Jane's, Squirrel Nut Zippers, Clark Bars, and Sweethearts. You know, Sweethearts are those like Valentine's candies. But the biggest demand appears to be for Necco's. The recipe for Necco's has been unchanged since. Soldiers during the Civil War ate Necco wafers. It explains a lot, by the way, to me about Necco's. Like, I'm not saying anything that hasn't been said. Necco wafers do not feel like a candy for our time, if you ask me. They feel like a candy from an era when they didn't have good candy.
Yeah.
Like, you know?
The pain of the candy was supposed to let you appreciate that you're alive. Like that,
yeah,
that,
right?
That was the guiding principle of candy back in the 1860s.
Yeah. like you're out there in the Civil War, you're just hoping that a cannonball doesn't take your head off, or you don't have to have a non-anesthetic related leg amputation. So a Necco wafer is a pretty nice break in your day.
Yeah.
Flash forward to 2018, ain't nobody got time for that. There's way better candy out there.
Yeah, well, the thing that gets me, first of all, I'm trying to look it up on the fly, and I shouldn't. I won't get distracted. But that, I was a little disappointed in this article that it didn't go into more details about the about the Civil War aspect of this. I now want to do some research and just find out if there's any other dazzling details about the intersection of Necco wafers and the Civil War. But the other thing that stood out to me about this article is, I guess I don't want the company to go out of business. I don't like Necco wafers. I'm not going to try and stock up on them for any reason, whether they go out of business or not. But if Necco wafers cease to exist, it's not going to affect me much. It's also not going to affect me if Sweetheart's Candy cease to exist.
Yeah.
But I am kind of surprised that there's not more of an outcry there. That seems like such a bigger connection to me. My only guess is, I feel like this is one of the, not to be like our friend Bean here, but this is one of those articles that raises more questions than gives answers, I think. Is it that so many other companies just make a version of Sweetheart's Valentine's candy now? Again, these are the small, chalky, hard little candies that say, I love you, or whatever on them. I wonder if there are just so many generics now that nobody really cares if Necco stops making them. That's my only guess, and that's a total guess.
I would have to imagine that they have. By the way, the company that actually makes all of this is based in Massachusetts. It's called the New England Confectionery Company, which sounds like in Revere, Massachusetts, which sounds, by the way, like exactly the company that would make Necco wafers and other chalk-related candies.
Yeah.
Come over here, little children. I've got some chalk for you.
And some Moxie soda.
Exactly. I would imagine that they must have some kind of trademark or patent on this. Well, I'll tell you a little history of Sweethearts if I can. Also known as Conversation Hearts. They're small heart-shaped sugar candies. Each heart is printed with a message such as, be mine, kiss me, call me, let's get busy. That must be an update. That must have been an attempt to sell more Sweethearts, right? I'm sure that was in the news somewhere. 'Cause let's get busy.
That's fresh.
That's very fresh, as Susie would say. And also it's, I always found the messages on the hearts to be mystifying, even when I was a kid doing Valentine's Day at Daniel Bagley Elementary School. Sweethearts are made by the New England Confectionery Company, or Necco, previously also made – oh, my God in heaven, Andrew. Mm-hmm. Necco. Did you understand that that stands for New England Confectionery Company?
No, just when you said, oh my God, I was going to say New England Candy Company.
That's the sound Necco, of my mind exploding.
Right.
Of course.
We must save this company.
I mean, honestly, just because we now know the backstory on Necco.
That's like when a famous person dies that you didn't pay attention to, and then you read their obit, and then you're just like, damn, I wish I'd been into this person when they're alive. It's kind of like that.
Necco. That is amazing. Now, I don't know what the O is, but
company, CEO,
obviously,
company, right?
Oh, company, co. Wow. Okay. That's just, I'm going to need a minute.
Do you need me to, I could pause here. I could fill, I could pause the recording, or I could just play some more Lord of the Rings music. It's totally your call.
I think I'm okay now. back in 1847, Oliver Chase invented a machine to cut lozenges from wafer candy, similar to Necco wafers, and that started a candy factory. His brother began printing sayings on the candy in 1866. He designed a machine that was able to press on the candy similar to a stamp. The candy was often used for weddings since the candies had witty sayings, such as, "Married in pink, he will take a drink." Married in white, you have chosen right. And married in satin, love will not be lasting. Ooh, they can't all be winners.
That's worse than my Sunny in the City, It's Gonna Be Pretty.
At least yours rhymed.
Yeah. What does that mean? I don't even understand, though. It was a different time.
It was. I also don't know how they fit all of that on the sweet Sweethearts. The heart-shaped conversation candies, to be called Sweethearts, got their start in 1901. As of 2010, the classic pastel candy formula was abandoned. Sweethearts are now softer candies with vivid colors and all new flavors. This was in no way written by the Necco Wafers PR people, which are more intense and even a bit sour. These new flavors include sour apple, strawberry, and spring fresh. In the 90s, Necco Vice President Walter Marshall wanted to update some of the sayings and retire others, including call me, email me, and fax me. The romantic expressions continue to be revised for young Americans. Necco receives hundreds of suggestions a year on new sayings. So all of that to say, Andrew, you're right. You'd think, I mean, Necco wafers are just a thing your weird uncle ate. Sweet tarts touched all of our lives. You'd think that would be where the outcry was.
I mean, especially, I mean, I don't want to live in a world where I can't give somebody a candy heart that says fax me on it. I mean, I don't know about you. I don't want to overstate this importance, but I kind of can't imagine what the rest of my life would look like without that opportunity.
Hey, I just met you. This is crazy, but here's my number, so fax me maybe.
Maybe if you can get the fucking thing to work, because fax machines never work. Have you ever had a smooth experience with a fax machine? I hate them so much. They are my least favorite machine, and I'm usually pro-machine.
There's always one person at the company who unfortunately understands how the fax machine works.
Yep.
And then they're just like, their full-time job is trying to tell other people, well, wait, did you hit nine pound
yeah,
first?
Bro.
Okay.
Frick, I forgot.
And then are the papers going through, or is it just not even letting the papers go through?
Well, did the papers go up or down? Well, facing up or facing down, you don't even where's your cover sheet? You have to write a cover sheet that says how many pieces of paper you're trying to fax.
God, faxes. I mean, are there still, I'm trying to think, are there working fax machines in America for any, would there be a reason why a fax machine would exist? I think with e-signatures, because the last bastion of fax machines were official documents and things that you needed to sign and then fax it back to them. I just think scanning and being able to literally just like what do we do? Oh, it's our taxes. Our accountant people sent back our tax forms, and you don't have to like print them out and sign them and fax them back. You just have this e-signature you do now. Mm-hmm. I think that's the fax machine. There's probably 15 of them still in America, but they can't be around for much longer.
They can't be around for much longer. I feel though, we're going to hear from listeners. I think that I'm with you that it doesn't make sense. Because what is a fax other than a scan of something that then transmits that information down the line and then just prints it out anyway? We have better ways of doing that. You can email that scan and print it out.
Yeah, but if you want to print it out, that's on you.
I still feel like I'm doing a quick search on the old Stens page, because I feel like this has come up in the past and people are like, oh, nope, I'm still faxing things and I'm the fax guy at work. Here's back in 2016... people are posting about their fax machines on the Stens page. I can't dig into it all right now. But yeah, I think that there are going to be people who write to us and say, no, it's still a huge part of my life. Now, I don't know if they're going to defend the fax machine or not. That'll be the interesting part.
One more thing before we move off the topic of Necco wafers and the Sweethearts. As of October 2011, Necco announced that the switch to natural flavors and colorings for their Necco wafer candies has led to a significant decline in sales. And so they will be returning their products to the original artificial flavors and colors.
Oh, I wish I could go back five. So when that was that, 2011 they tried that stunt?
That was a while ago. It obviously didn't work. Mm. But it's hilarious to me that there were people, and I'm sure some of them in our listening audience, and you know, peace and love. Like, sometimes I'll just pound a violet crumble for no reason, so I can't judge. But like, it's funny to me that somebody ate like a sweet tart or a Necco wafer, which was made with more natural flavoring and was softer and was like, to my taste, like less gross than the original. They ate it and they said, no. Doesn't have all of that chalkiness of a Tums that I've come to love in my candy products. Like there was an outcry. I mean, I'm I am both surprised and not surprised that that happened.
It's the same person who says, get out of my face with that good-tasting modern Listerine. I like the yellow stuff. The stuff that you can't even put in your mouth without crying.
God, I take that as a personal challenge sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
I use Act. But, yeah, back in the days of Listerine, I would just be like, can I do this for 30 seconds?
Mm-hmm.
'Cause that was some brutal stuff.
Do you have the Act where you press it in and it just like it squeezes the right amount up into the top of the thing? Am I thinking of the right kind of mouthwash? Do you have any idea what I'm talking about?
Yes, of course. It gives you a single serving of the mouthwash. I think I did at one time, and I liked that. I thought that was kind of a whiz bang little bit of technology. Now I just use a kind of regular one. You take the cap off and you take a swig of it. Mm-hmm. But I have to admit, every time I take a swig of mouthwash directly out of the container, I think, is this the day I'm going to just drink this and go straight Kitty Dukakis on? And I don't mean because I'm like struggling with not drinking or having the impulse. There's just something that feels weird to me, because that's sort of something from like books and television and movies about somebody who's just right at the edge. It's like, you're drinking mouthwash. And there's something about me looking into the mirror in our bathroom, opening a bottle of mouthwash, mm-hmm. and just like taking a slug of it that feels like, this could turn at some point.
There's like Nick Drake playing in the background as you slowly, slowly uncap the mouthwash.
That's right. Keeping things in food news, an unidentified man was admitted to the hospital recently. He was 34 years old. He went to the hospital in Cooperstown, New York.
Cooperston.
Or, as it's been called on this show, Cooperston. With what clinicians described as a thunderclap headache. That is the medical term for the kind of headache that this person was having. His problems began when he ate a whole Carolina Reaper, the hottest pepper in the world, according to the Guinness World Records, while participating in a hot pepper eating competition. He started experiencing dry heaves, which is not uncommon, apparently, when people are having hot pepper eating contests. But then he got a pain in his neck and in his head that came on like a thunderclap. And so he went to the hospital. The doctor said that what was happening was a constriction in some arteries that can cause intense headaches. The scientific term for this temporary narrowing of the arteries is reversible cerebral vasoconstriction syndrome, a.k.a. thunderclap. Now, I didn't know this until I read this article, Andrew, but the Carolina Reaper pepper, and of course, now that I think about it, of course, you know, with hybrids being possible when it comes to plants, of course, the hottest peppers in the world are not just a pepper that grew on a sunny side of a hill and therefore was really hot. You got companies that are trying to crossbreed and make the hottest pepper they can. Have you read this article yet?
No. This is all new to me.
The creator of the Carolina Reaper, which comes in at, how many Scoville units is this bad boy? I don't want to guess. It's in the millions. By the way, I've had Carolina Reaper before. You were at the show.
Yeah, I was going to ask you. I said I didn't say.
I'm sorry. 500,000 Scoville units, not in the millions. 500,000 Scoville units, of course, are the measure of heat. 500,000 Scoville units.
So I remember you guys talking about this is on Live Wire. You had a hot pepper expert come out on the stage and he tried a bunch of peppers. And I remember you guys talking about this name rang a bell to me. And you actually ate one of these then, or you ate part of one of these?
I don't think I ate an entire one. I think I maybe ate half of one. And oddly enough, and they point this out in the article, people just respond differently to hot peppers. And, you know, capsaicin is the active ingredient that makes things really spicy. I for that show, mostly to try to create a spectacle, I think we tasted a variety of hot peppers. And then, you know, we were chasing them with like whiskey and milk and a variety of things. I don't remember any of the peppers being crazily hot for me. But apparently for this guy, it really interacted poorly with him. He had to go to the hospital. The Carolina Reaper was created by a guy named Ed Curry. They say in this article, just kind of casually, reached by phone at the Puckerbutt Pepper Company.
Nope.
The Reaper's creator, Ed Curry, offered mixed advice on pepper consumption. On the one hand, he said, people who eat the whole Reapers are just being stupid. But Smokin' Ed, as he calls himself, by the way, I said this yesterday about another well-known person, I forget who. I don't think Smokin' Ed and I would have a ton to talk about if we got together. If we met at the offices of Puckerbutt Pepper Company.
Yeah.
And he was like, I'm Ed, call me Smokin' Ed. I'd be like, yeah, I'll be at the Cracker Barrel down the street if you need me getting drunk on mouthwash.
I like the fact that the article says, as he calls himself, not as he is known or has other people call him. He came up with that himself, and he is trying to astroturf his own nickname.
Exactly. Lurk, as he calls himself, also gave the impression that eating one of these peppers wasn't such a bad thing. We eat them all the time, he said, with no ill consequences beyond pain. Mr. Curry, Smokin' Ed, Smokin' Lurk indulges in other competitions of suffering. For instance, and by the way, Andrew, I didn't know this was a thing either, he said he had recently taken the Death Nut Challenge, which involves eating insanely hot peanuts.
Huh. So just like seasoned to be really hot. That seems like a weird thing. Like a pepper eating thing makes sense because it's natural, or in this case, you know, created, but still it's a natural thing. But like,
right.
Why peanuts? Like, why not just, it sounds like they just flavor blast these things with spice. Why not make a Flamin' Hot Cheetos?
Why not a Death Sweetheart?
Yeah.
Like, you could just put it on anything.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm thinking. But anyway, I'm thinking also, I mean, not to get gross, but I think it's a thing that jumps to everybody's mind. Like, this guy with the thunderclap headache, also, like, what is he doing to his digestive system? I mentioned to you before the show that I just pounded a banh mi sandwich from the place across the street from me, and it had two jalapenos on top of it. And I like jalapenos. But man, your stomach makes noises for a while. Well, my stomach makes noises for a while after eating them. And, you know, jalapeno is a pretty common pepper. It's nothing like one of these.
Jalapeno!
What are they? Diablo? What are these things again?
Carolina Reaper.
Yeah, Carolina Reapers. Yeah. So anyway, without getting gross about
it,
I was trying to find on
YouTube some people who've taken the Death Nut Challenge.
Mm-hmm.
This guy, under the YouTube title of Buzzworthy, his head looks like a peanut. I don't know if that's why he got into it. His head looks like an Amish peanut. Let's hear what he has to say about this.
Challenge. I have it right here. I opened it up. I cut them open for easy access. I'll show you.
Oh, so these death nuts come in like a sealed, like, foil packet because they're so deadly.
I see.
There's two or three in the first one, two in the second, two in the third, and one in the fourth, and one in the fifth. So
okay, let's just jump ahead to the good stuff here, Peanut. He's eating one
second
now.
Second one.
You're welcome, ASMR fans.
This one's for you, Sammy.
Showing no reaction. He's in his fourth death nut.
So far, not too bad. Hot, but not too bad. Third, I can tell they're hot. Hotter because they're coated worse.
They're coated worse.
Definitely hotter. I can tell it's going to build. Fourth.
By the way, he does have a bottle of Listerine mouthwash in the far back of this living room. Just
the death nut.
Keep every. Oh, he's at the death nut. I see. So I guess maybe the, like, you work your way up to the death nut.
I see. Okay.
By the way, this guy who goes by the YouTube handle of Buzzworthy, I want to help him with some of his marketing because his description of this video is, I do the death nut challenge. My apologies if I did this wrong. Let's hear what happens when he eats the death nut. He's chewing it. He's about to swallow it.
Is he grimacing?
Let's see.
Yeah, he looks pretty unaffected, but I feel like
they're hot.
That's his official.
building.
They're hot. He almost looks like he's wanting it to be hotter. Like, he looks disappointed.
Is it as hot as eating an actual pepper? I don't think so. I mean, don't get me wrong, it's intense, but...
Let's just jump to the end of the video and see.
If he's still alive.
8 minutes in now. He's just... He seems fine. I mean, he doesn't look great, but he doesn't look like he's having a...
It's not that bad, honestly. It is, but it's not.
Well, he's got away with words.
Meat and peppers.
Yeah.
Is he crying? I mean, it sounds like he's got the patented Walsh sniffles, which I can appreciate, although copyright
2018. Oh, this is interesting.
Huh.
This is interesting. So he put up the Death Nut Challenge 20 hours ago, by the way.
Oh, this is fresh.
Don't let anyone tell you we don't bring you the absolute piping, most piping hot breaking news on this show. So 20 hours ago, he takes the Death Nut Challenge. 18 hours ago, he puts up another video that says, I messed up the Death Nut Challenge.
Oh, no.
Can we check this one out? It's 2 minutes long.
We must.
Here we go.
After all the hype and excitement of this, I guess I screwed it up. Somebody left me a comment and said that this was supposed to come with an instruction card, that there were rules to this, and I didn't know that. And I did a previous video before I did the challenge where I looked at this and all everything. Unless it's this, I mean, this is the only. There's nothing in here. I looked in the. I even dug the envelope out of the trash and looked in the envelope. I didn't get a card with mine. If anybody can, I mean, I don't doubt it. I just watched a video of a guy and he was reading it. I don't know what it looks like. But sorry, I mean, it sucks because I wanted to do it correctly. I mean, I was so excited to do this and so geeked and I screwed it up.
Aw, now I feel bad for this guy.
That is exactly what
I
was going to say.
Differently.
I know.
Like, he ate. I mean, what would the instructions be? Like, whoever was. Listen,
somebody
we need to get in touch with this guy and tell him to block out the haters.
Yeah.
He's getting cyberbullied to within an inch of his life. He ate the nuts. I watched him do it. Like, I don't know what he could have done differently. I mean, I don't know what the instructions would have said. I just think he's too tough for the Death Nut. he doesn't need to apologize for that, Buzzworthy.
I agree.
He does not need to apologize for that.
As listening to the end of that, I was feeling like I was laughing my ass off at first because he was taking it so seriously. And yes, is he still taking it too seriously? By most standards, yes. I don't know what this guy's got going on in his life, but he sounds like legit, like he signed up for this thing. He waited, like you wait for a broken Walkman to come.
Yeah, you know,
to
you identify with this.
To get his thing. I mean, this is probably something he'd been planning and looking forward to for a while. And I won't lie. I hear a little broken Walkman Andy in Super Buzz or whatever. So
Buzzworthy. Yeah, I hear that. I hope everybody should be nice to this guy. Like, by the way, thanks, Internet. Like, this guy eats a bunch of super spicy nuts. He's all excited. He ordered them in the mail. He puts the video up, and then someone's first feedback is like, you didn't do it right. You didn't read the instructions. Yeah. And then he's all bummed out. Well, anyway. I guess are we ready to move on to emails and emails? Is there anything else to be
said? I
guess
so. You sound – how are you doing? You sound a little sad.
I didn't read the instructions on how to host a podcast. I thought it was you eat a violet crumble. You talk about your dad's Facebook posts. You play a couple random videos on the internet, and then you're I'm sorry, okay? I blew it. That's what I didn't. If there were instructions, they didn't come with the computer. Sorry.
All right. I know you know about TBTL, the podcast. You're listening to it right now. But have you tried TBTL, the newsletter? Because you can. Just go over to TBTL.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. I got to say, it's a lot of fun. Every week, Luke and I record a little video that we include in the newsletter. It's called Hey Dummies. We answer your questions, any questions you want to ask us. Well, there's all kinds of things in the newsletter. Don't take my word for it. Here, this is Mary. She's a big fan of the newsletter.
It has a nice welcome introduction, but then you have these phenomenal GIFs that are so much fun. You talk about amazing, wonderful people, and you introduce us to new things. And then the songs of the week. Oh, my gosh. And it just makes me so happy.
It can make you happy, too. I mean, listen, this is coming from Mary. She doesn't even listen to the podcast. She's here just for the newsletter. No joke. So, again, go to TBTL.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. And we'll try to bring a little extra sunshine to your inbox every Friday afternoon.
Here I go once again with the email. Every week, I hope that it's from a female. Oh, man, it's not from a female.
Guess what's happening right now, Andrew?
What's happening?
Sunshine.
I told you!
You called it. You called it, brother.
If Walsh is seeing rain, really... Luke's going to be in pain. Yeah. But if it's sunny in Seattle, Luke's going to be... happy north of Seattle. See, it all rhymes.
Yep. Oh, absolutely. See, this is really throwing a wrench in my plan to just lump it up this afternoon.
Isn't it sometimes?
It's one thing to lump it up when it's raining and gross. It's another thing when it's actually okay out and you have no excuse for not being productive.
That was how I felt a lot in L.A. because I'm a lazy man by nature, and the rain is an excuse to be lazy. And when it's like just sunny all the time, you're like, oh, I just had this feeling of guilt all the time for not, I don't know, going to the beach or whatever the hell you're supposed to do in the sun.
Surfing, hanging 10.
I am a big surfer. New listeners will understand that. I'm known for my surfing. You want me to get going here?
Anything interesting in the world of emails and
Vmails? I think there's something interesting going on.
There's a right way to run.
This is a birthday shout out from me, and I think you, Luke, to none other than our friend Phyllis Fletcher. I saw on Facebook it's her birthday. Happy birthday, P. Fletch! You earned
this. Happy birthday! You know my birthday present to Phyllis is going to be
a bass.
I'm going to respond to every Howard Stern-related text message I get.
Oh, no. Oh, Phyllis,
I'm available
are you hearing
all
this?
Day for Stern texting. Dude, you know what's crazy? I might have mentioned this before, but, like, Carrie has all of a sudden turned a corner with Stern. Like, I don't know if I mentioned this on the air or off the air, but, like, we got in the car the other day, and Stern was on, and I was like, oh, I'll turn this off. And she goes, no, I've actually been listening. And now, like, she'll come home, and she'll be like, did you hear what Ronnie the limo driver said? And I'm like, I don't know how to exist. It's great, but I don't know how to exist in this world where my wife also cares about the world of Stern now. And also, I know if Phyllis could hear Carrie saying, you know, something about Ronnie the limo driver, she would have a mind explosion like I did when I learned what NECO stood for.
I think you need to loop in
Mason.
Carrie. Any texts now that you have with the Stern and you and Phyllis and sometimes Mason, you can loop in. Carrie, do you feel good about, like, is it fun? I guess you just said you don't know how to feel
it
about it.
It is fun. No, it's fun, but see, I've been, like, I've lived with the shame of being a Stern listener for so long. Like, you know, having this kind of private, semi-private relationship with the show and all these characters, and it's just... I'm excited, but it's just a totally different world to just be, like, talking about, like, oh, did you hear? And then, like, Baba Booey did this. And then, like, can you, like, JD, you know, whatever. Like, it's just a new world for me. I'm embracing it, but it's just a different thing.
Yeah. Hey, I have an email here for you that I just think is a perfect lurk burbunk. Merle. Mm-hmm. And it's from our friend, listener Lee, who says he's checking in to see if he made the right decision about something. He says, I'm a semi-regular traveler for work. I take a couple of cross-country trips a year for work and a couple for vacation. As such, I don't have status on Alaska, but they are my first choice in airlines. And I have my own set of travel hacks, like I sign up for TSA PreCheck. I always pay for Coach Plus when choosing my seat, and I never recline my seat. Something obviously very close to my heart. Which brings me to my question. On my most recent trip to D.C., D.C. to SeaTac, rather, so coming back here to Seattle, my colleague who I was traveling with has big baller status on Alaska and upgraded me to row one, seat D in first class with her. This is my first, I'm already loving this. I can already taste the warm almonds. Lee says, this is my first time being in first class, and I wanted to act like I have been here before. The flight is a late flight at the end of a three-day conference, and I am beat. I want nothing more than to recline my seat and go to sleep, but I don't want to be that guy who reclines his seat. I have chosen to make the best of it and not recline. My question for next time, does the don't recline rule apply to first class? Power out. Listener
absolutely
Lee
not.
Shoreline 10. I didn't think so, but I haven't been in first class as much.
And I guess I should have clarified that, but those rules do not apply in first class. Everybody has plenty of room. If you lean back, if the person in front of you leans back in first class, you're doing A-OK.
Yeah.
So I feel bad for listener Lee. I hope I didn't. I feel bad that he didn't get to recline his seat because of thinking I was going to be kind of hovering like Jiminy Cricket or something, telling him not to do that, but. Mm-hmm. First class, you do you.
How about another? You know, this is a piece of since we just have a little, we have a couple of minutes here, right? Yeah. We got to go to a break. Let's see here. We going to check in traffic on the sevens? No, we got a couple of minutes before we do that. So
got a real situation in Digstown.
Here's an OPP from listener Christine. She sent this to me forever ago. I've had this on my list for months. I think it's a good question. I think it's also probably too late to help her, but let's raise it as a theoretical anyway. Christine says, my newly divorced friend has a serious boyfriend. I don't like the boyfriend. That's fine. I keep my mouth shut. I'm not dating him, whatever makes her happy, etc. The problem is my partner is becoming friends with the boyfriend I don't like. Oh, and then she gives me her phone number. She says, call if you want to talk deets. She's on the East Coast. I don't think we're going to do that, although we could. Yeah, I guess there's not as much information here, but do you have any thoughts off the top of your head, or have you ever found yourself in this situation where somebody you're dating is becoming friends with somebody that you don't want to be around?
I wonder if I've actually been like the person in the equation who's latching on to someone that my partner is kind of could take or leave. You know what I mean? Like, I don't remember being the person whose partner was advocating for hanging out with a certain person. And I was like, I'm medium on them, but I've probably done that before. That's a tough call. Well, maybe what it could be is, I mean, I guess it's complicated because this is the boyfriend of presumably a female friend. Of the emailer,
I think so. My newly divorced friend is a serious boyfriend. Yeah, so the newly divorced person, I believe, is a woman based on pronouns here, and has a serious boyfriend.
Because I was going to say maybe this could just be a thing where, like, if the person emailing, if her boyfriend is really likes this feller, maybe they could just have a friendship that exists mostly independent of the person emailing. But if the person's dating her friend, then it's sort of like, I mean, that would be a little hard to navigate.
Yeah.
If the three of them are hanging out, it would only make sense that probably the person emailing would hang out with them.
That's interesting.
That's a tough one.
Yeah. Yeah. And also, yeah, you're right. I'm not sure if Christine's partner is a boy or a girl. But I guess that doesn't really play into it too much. From my own experience, I feel like this is relatable to me. But my problem is mostly... My problem is mostly that I'm not huge on hanging out, right? And so I'm like the wrong person to ask. I can't – I can't think of anybody that Genevieve has befriended who, like, I really, really dislike. You know, I mean, we've been together a really long time. I'm sure maybe when we were first dating, there were some people. I mean, but nothing that kind of put us in this situation. But for the most part, I feel like Genevieve and I have individual relationships with people. It doesn't seem to me like it's the hardest transition for Christine's partner to become friends with somebody and not necessarily drag Christine into it. But that may just be the kind of dynamic that I have set up in my own life of, well, Andrew's staying home today because he's Andrew. Whereas if you're a very social person, you're going out all the time, but, you know, Christine isn't showing up to these group events, maybe it'll be kind of obvious. So anyway, I guess I have
it
no
is
advice.
Hard. I will tell you this. When you're in a couple, it is very, very, I wouldn't say hard, but it seems to be a very exciting thing when you meet when you're friends with a fellow couple and you like each member of the couple a lot. Because you sometimes do get like one person who's pretty great and one person who's kind of a snore or vice versa. Like, you know, and I'm just going to go with like the heterosexual model on this. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, the husband's like, you know, the husband's fun, interesting to be around. The wife, kind of a nightmare. Or, oh, the wife is great. Husband, ugh, could take him or leave him. It's like when both of them are great and fun to hang out with, you got to run. You got to form some kind of a polyamorous life together with those people, because that's the sweet spot when you both like the other people equally. That's kind of, I wouldn't say rare, but that's nice.
Well, now that you've put it that way, the fact that you and Carrie haven't asked us to swing makes me wonder who in our relationship you guys aren't big on. Is it me?
Oh, you guys are one of the rare ones where we don't like either of you.
Oh, it's a work relationship. We're colleagues.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh.
Right, exactly.
It was obvious. It was right there the whole time.
Yeah. Meanwhile, I am cultivating quite a friendship with Window Man. I think he just gets me.
He's also got a sense of daring do that excites me.
Yeah, we have
me.
A lot of windows that need cleaning.
Hey, really quickly on that, I got a couple of messages from people that just said, you know, one thing with this tinfoil over the windows, it's probably not insulation. And I'm looking at it now, and it really does look like tinfoil. Like, I can almost see that it's about the width of tinfoil. I'm talking about this apartment building across the alley from me where you can see somebody has put tinfoil over a bunch of their windows. And I heard a kind of broken up voicemail from one person who works nights and says, you know, that's kind of what you got to do, man, unless you have like blackout curtains. If you're sleeping during the day when everybody else is awake, you got to put tinfoil over your windows. So that's one working theory.
Hmm. Okay. So it's just maybe not about mental illness, but about light sensitivity because they're on an opposite schedule.
Yeah, and I don't even know. I don't think that I was implying that I personally thought it was like some sort of mental illness so much as just somebody who really stopped giving any Fs. And it was just kind of like, I want privacy. I don't need light that much. I'm just going to put these things up, and just went on with their life. But yeah, you know, it might actually be somebody who's working.
But it is
nice.
It is. But that being said, I mean, you know, tinfoil helmets are maybe not. I don't know if anyone. Maybe one time, one guy wore a tinfoil helmet, yeah, so the government couldn't read his thoughts, and it just became shorthand.
Sure.
But you know, when you do see tinfoil on the windows, it does naturally cause one's mind to think of somebody who is dealing with that kind of stuff, that kind of mental illness.
But, yeah, or just again, generally speaking, is maybe not living their best life. I mean, that was
right.
What
how
my,
about that? Yeah,
what my brain right. went to right away, which is maybe
yeah, totally.
Slightly unfair. I would say though, you know, if you and I don't want to tell people their business, but if you can't afford it, though, I mean, they do make pretty effective blockout curtains. I know, like mini blinds and stuff, the light will kind of shine through there. But I know that Genevieve, we have some kind of like, I don't know if they're technically blackout curtains, but they're very heavy curtains. And they have those in, yeah, like hotel rooms, right? It's very disorienting. I mean, I love it, but I got to be careful. If I'm traveling for work, Luke, I don't know if you're the same way. You do way more of this than I do. But like, I love the blackout curtains in a hotel room. They really work, but it makes it – you're running the risk of actually sleeping through your alarm more, or at least I am, because it just I think the sun coming through the window is part of the waking up experience.
I actually, generally speaking, leave the blinds open for
because
that exact
of that
reason.
Yeah.
unless I had something crazy, like maybe I was working till really late and I can sleep in the next day, then I'll like pull the blinds. But it actually helps me because as it gets light, it kind of wakes me up. Like, we don't actually have curtains in our bedroom because of the way that our bedroom windows are set up. You can't, like, you couldn't see into our bedroom from really anywhere. So we don't need them for privacy. And the light is kind of great, actually, because it just makes getting up, for me anyway, everybody reacts differently, but for me it's kind of a nice way to ease into being awake. But something happened the other day at the hotel in Portland. My favorite hotel pretty much in the world, by the way. But I was sleeping. I had put the Do Not Disturb sign out because I'd had a kind of a late night and I was really tired. And it was a Saturday. I was really looking forward to doing some sleeping in. And so I did pull the curtains closed and I had the sign out. And they knocked on the door at like 9:30. And I was like, oh, I must have forgotten to put the sign out. And so I hollered, oh, I'm still in here or whatever I said. And then they just went away. And then I went later when I left and I looked and the Do Not Disturb was on the door. I was like, what were you – why did you need to knock at 9:30 in the morning? What was that about? And I did still tip that person, but I was a little peeved.
That has happened to me a lot, and I don't get it. I don't get it at all. What is it – I mean, not to do a bad – imitation of Seinfeld here, but what does
that's why you have the reservation
right, exactly what I was thinking of. Like, what part of Do Not Disturb, like, you provided this to us, like, if I can't communicate this to you using the sign you gave me, like, what are my other options here? Do I have to write it in lipstick on a napkin,
right, or pink ink? It's like, you gave me a sign, it said disturb, do not disturb. Mm-hmm. I chose the side that says no moleste, right, as Tig Notaro would say.
Right.
Like, that's all I got. That's, as the consumer here, that's the only thing I can do to tell you I do not want to be disturbed.
It's like being in a Brazilian steakhouse and just like, it's green. Yeah, exactly. Why am I not getting meat? I don't get it.
Unless you're knocking to bring me one of those awesome cheese puffs. No moleste.
They give you cheese puffs at your place?
At Fogo de Chão. At those, like, there's that Brazilian, there's a Brazilian cheese bread puff.
That's
part of the whole Brazilian steakhouse experience.
See, that's a blind spot for me. And I've actually only been to one Brazilian steakhouse with the red green card, and that was, oh my God, man. That was probably in like 2003. So it's been a really, really long time. But also because cheese doesn't, you know, I'm like Westworld. It doesn't look like anything to me. That was totally lost on me. That's coming back.
You know
back.
What's so sad? I just Googled. Yeah, it is. I just Googled. I think I'm going to like it more now because, like, they're out. They're out in the world, right? That's the whole idea. They've escaped.
I think.
I just Googled Brazilian steakhouse near me, which, you know, I love Bellingham. I'm so happy I live here. But this is a reminder of when I'm not living in Seattle or a major city because, you know, there's probably five options for you where you live. First thing that comes up, Applebee's grill plus bar.
I always forget that the roots of Applebee's are in Brazil. How do I always forget that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. God, now I got Brazilian steakhouse on the brain. Or as we used to call it when we'd go in Vegas, meat swords.
Yeah.
Because they just bring those, like, you know, everything around on one of those swords. Honestly, though, it's the accoutrement that I like with all of that stuff. The meat's fine and all, but I love, like, the plantains and black beans. I love those little cheesy puffs, which, by the way, are more bread than cheese. So if you do see those at some point, give them, as Camaro Kev would say, give them a day in court, because I think you might like them. But, you know, like, you've only been to one of these, so I don't know how, like, carefully you studied the joint, but, like, a lot of times they'll have, like, that like Fogo de Chão is, like, the big national chain, I think, that does these. And they will have a really, really amazing salad bar, too, with, like, hearts of palm and every kind of yummy thing you could want to put in a salad. And the temptation is just to eat all of this stuff that's not the meat. But you're also paying, like, $70 or something, and you feel like you should just be eating, like, rare filet mignon or whatever the – you know, it's like being at the buffet. Whatever the absolutely most valuable meat product is they're bringing around, you should be mainlining that to get your money's worth.
Yes. Before we go, I have a story I want to tell you. One more, like, quick neighborhood story. But really quickly, it seems, though, on your current situation, diet speaking, sorry, I've been studying under Yoda. He's been teaching me how to communicate better. It would seems like a trip to the Brazilian steakhouse would be great for you, and that you would, to use your word, swerve on the accoutrement and go right for the meats, right?
Yes, but you know what I would do in that case is I would just declare it a cheat day, like I did today when I ate a bag of what were those pita chips. Here's what I would do. I would go, but if I'm going to pay $70 and have a fun night out with my friends, or even just a fun night out with myself, I would want to eat the side business to have the full experience. So you're right. It is, if I was just going to like try to eat some steak and be on my grind, as it were, I would go to a steak place and get one, or I would buy a steak at the store and grill it up here. Mm-hmm. But if I was going to full-on Fogo de Chao, by the way, should I join the Fogo de Chao e-newsletter is the real question as I'm at their website.
Probably not. Do they do a Hey Meaties video? Hey Meaties. That wasn't that good.
That was good, dude. I could totally – that. I think I have a fairly decent show title idea, but that could have been a pretty strong idea.
Hey Meaties.
I would not go to Fogo de Chao and spend all that money and then not have the cheese puffs and the baby corns and the salad and – all the things. I've told you this before probably on the show, but I have Googled how many carbs baby corns have.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Less. They're not corn. They look like corn, but they're not in the corn family.
Yeah, that makes sense.
There's something else.
Yeah. Hey,
who've been holding off on baby corns because you're worried about the carbs,
go for it. Just go nuts. As long as you eat them, you know, like a corn on the cob.
Yes, exactly.
I don't know if I'm forcing this in here or if it's interesting or not, but let's go for it. We're talking about cheese. I wanted to tell you that you would be proud of me because I ate some weird ass cheeses on a sandwich the other day. I didn't know what they were, but I ate them and everything tasted good. And the key was just not to look down at the cheese too much. But the context around this sandwich, I think, is more interesting. You know, I got a big thing for my new neighborhood, and maybe it's getting tiresome me talking about it all the time, but one thing that I've talked about on the show a lot is the kind of more authentic kind of Seattle places, or just a place in Seattle that's been around for more than 5 years, and et cetera, et cetera. And I live in a neighborhood that has a lot of those kind of funky little places, although I just found out that Rain City Burgers, which you probably know well, Luke, a little institution here on the corner, which is in an old building, is being torn down. So they can, build another one of the buildings that looks like all the other new buildings around here. So that's a bummer. But there's also a little restaurant called Olympic Pizza and Pasta. It's a few doors down from me. And I go in. I've been wanting to go in. And I mean, it's completely my kind of place, right? It's just going to be a bunch of, pizza and pasta-ish stuff. I imagine that you could get a good grinder there. That's what I think every time I pass it. And I'm thinking, oh, this is going to be great. They have it's a little restaurant, but it looks like it hasn't really changed since the 80s. It's got like a Miller Lite sign in the window or something along the lines of that. No pretense. I love it. I go in there for lunch on Friday. You and Lindy, we did the show here. Then you guys took off. We're done with the work pretty early that day. So I'm like, this is great. I'm going to go see if they have a meatball sub. And I go in there. And I don't know how to describe the woman who was serving me. Well, first I walk in and it's a pretty old woman who doesn't really say much. She kind of like just stares at me. And then I realized she was saying anywhere. And I'm like, oh, I can sit anywhere. She's like, yeah. So I take a table by the window. And then a much younger woman who I want to say is probably around my age, but somehow basically gave me the vibe of like Cher in Moonlighting. Sort of. She was like a woman. She wasn't like super young, but she was attractive, had big black curly hair. And somehow we got talking and like she's in from New York. I thought that she was like back home from a visit to New York. It turns out she lives in New York now and she's back in town to celebrate Greek Easter with her family, which was this last Sunday. And she's like, yeah, so because I made some comment. I'm like, man, you just got back off a flight and you had to come right to work. She's like, no, I'm a I'm just in town for Greek Easter, and, you know, my family runs this place, so I'm just here helping out. And she's like, kind of, there's a couple other customers in there, and she's talking to them all. It was just like the most, like, it's exact. This is the future liberal Andrews want. Like, it was just like, just the kind of, not small towniness, but just like familial vibe of this place was so great. And I know, you know, that one of these days I'm going to walk by and it's going to have a notice that it's going to be torn down. But for the moment, it seems to be alive and I hope well. And I just loved this moment. It just seemed like if you could write a screenplay about, the characters who come in and out of this place. Does any of that register? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Absolutely. No, I know. And those Olympia Pizza and Pastas, that's kind of a, not a chain, but there's a number of them around Seattle.
Oh,
and,
Olympic, though,
there's
right?
One, Olympic, sorry. Yeah, okay. Olympic. There's one on Capitol Hill on 15th.
No
there
shit.
There used to be, anyway. That was where Lindy West and I were sitting when I feel like her whole professional life was kind of about to take off like a rocket ship. We were sitting, probably eating some cheese bread or something, and she had just written this review in The Stranger of Sex and the City, movie.
Yeah.
And it became a thing, and Roger Ebert, like, retweeted it. This tells you how long ago it was Roger Ebert was alive. And I remember we're just sitting there, and her phone is just going like a slot machine. And she was like, what's happening right now? And it was like the beginning of her being nationally known. And that was at an Olympic Pizza and Pasta. So those places are great. Now, my question is, did the woman, the kind of Cher-esque woman who was there for Greek Easter and helping out, at any point did she say, because I feel like that would be indicating it might have actually been Cher.
We're just having a nice conversation. We're just having a nice conversation about a nice story about my neighborhood, and you got to bring that into this? Fine. Let's end this show.
All right, fine. I was going to propose that we call it... Wait. Why do I even write things down and then I can't find them? What is the point of life? Violent Crumble.
I like Violent Crumble. I also, this is real hacky, but I'll just throw it out there. The Facts of Life, FAX.
No, that's good. It's got to go.
Seriously, we're going with that? How many times do you think that joke has been made already online? Like how many, here, can I just do a, quick Google on the
probably
facts
more than Violent Crumble.
of Life, FAX. First thing that pops up is, oh, it just thinks I misspelled facts. The first legit thing is a Vox article called The Facts of Life, Why American Medicine Still Runs on Fax Machines. This is from January of 2018, Luke. Why American Medicine Still Runs on Fax Machines. So there's one answer to our question. Anyway, all right, we'll go with that. And what about music? Did you have any thoughts?
I did, and then I forgot them.
Shared? Are you being serious? Are you about to clown me?
Oh yeah, how about Cher, just like Jesse James?
Okay, I'm looking
I love
for
this song.
Yeah, here it is. I bet you, is this one of those that name rings a bell? I would never be able to sing this for you though.
It's so good. I made it my goal to try to learn how to sing this song for karaoke. Way too high. All right, that's gonna do it for our show today. But we'll be right back here tomorrow with more Imaginary Radio for you. Until then, please remember, no mountain too tall.
And good luck to all.
Honey, are you looking for some trouble tonight? Well, all right. You think you're so bad, drive the women for a while. Shoot them all down with the flash on your pretty smile. Honey, but you're mad tonight. Well, that's right. You think you'll knock me on my feet till I'm flat on the floor. Jesse James. You're an outlaw lover and I'm after your hide. Well, you ain't so strong, won't be long till you're
power out.